Hello and welcome to the Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. This series explores themes and topics relating to all things digital and the shift we're experiencing as the digital era impacts our lives everywhere. My name is George Seiler, I'm from the Ludic Group, and this episode is brought to you by the authors of the book, Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations, published by Navarro and available on Amazon, Kindle, and in bookstores near you. This episode is about leadership in the digital era. We are joined today by the authors Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hello.
With our special guest, Eve Simon. Eve is the curator of the Future of Leadership Salon and a recent TEDx speaker on the topic of evolutionary leadership. Born and raised in Germany, now living in Silicon Valley and Düsseldorf. Welcome, Eve.
Thank you so much, George. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a bit about how you spend your time between these two vast time zones. That must be an interesting lifestyle.
It's so interesting you're starting with this question, George, because I get this asked a lot, especially from my European environment, and not so much from Silicon Valley, as this is already a place of transformation. People come and go and live the most unusual lifestyles. But I do have to say, I lived for good in Silicon Valley for 7 years before I started this life on two continents, which was driven by a personal decision, as I wanted that my daughter grows up with both languages, with both cultures, close to her father and close to her grandparents. But I do have to say it's very enriching, and it suits me well because I definitely have these two sides. I have a very creative mind, which always needs new igniters, which I definitely find in Silicon Valley, but there's also a part of me which is very grounded, and I love the sustainable thinking we Europeans have. So I would say it brings in the best of two worlds, and of course also my clients really gain from these insights.
And so today we're going to talk about evolutionary leadership, and Paul and Garrick, you've written extensively about this in your book.
One of the things that we wrote about the context of what's going on, maybe a nice place to start. If I read from the book, it says, in today's digital world, the opportunities for harnessing complexity are greater than ever before. Meanwhile, challenges are ever present and can easily come with high cost or even failure. Organizations of any size, from the local shop to a multinational business, can tap into an ecosystem of suppliers, partners, and technology tools. They can unlock the potential of global teams, whether they directly employ them or not. Collaboration technologies have given rise to radical new ways of working and brought the prospect of truly dynamic and responsive virtual teamwork tantalizingly into view. What do you think, Eve?
Wow. First, I think I have to take a deep breath, because just in this short paragraph out of your amazing book, I think are so many really key points we have to take in consideration when we talk about the future of leadership, and especially the responsibility leaders have today. So starting with the new form of ecosystem we are facing, obviously technology and the internet is connecting us all. We are not separated from each other. We have pretty much no borders anymore, so everything is possible. That was the second part. The race of technology allows us almost everything, and the question is, what kind of talents can we find, and not just in our region, but globally, and which talents are right for the path we are looking for? So I think in this paragraph are really key points. Ecosystem, talents, and with the exponential growth of technology, all the opportunities, but also the questions about what are we really focusing on to create the right future.
Mm. Where do you think leadership is going? If it's about evolutionary leadership, what is it evolving to? I mean, we know where it's evolving from, but what is it evolving to in your mind?
So maybe we take a little step back. So from my point of view, really good leaders go through different stages. We all know from Harvard Business, they go through 7 stages, but there is so much more to really reach maturity in that, which I call the evolutionary leader. So when you reach this maturity of evolutionary leadership, you know how to build innovation. You were once an achiever who has a lot of great ideas and brings this to the place. You are also a little bit of the diplomat. But an evolutionary leader knows himself extremely well and also sees the wider system and the impact he has and also his company and his products have to society.
He or she,
absolutely. Thank you so much for pointing that out. So an evolutionary leader is leading very much from the heart, from careship, with a brilliant mind and lots of expertise towards the greater good of all.
At what stage can you become an evolutionary leader? Does this evolution begin right at the beginning of your career, or is it something that you need to actively work on, or what do you need to deploy to build these characteristics?
George, this is a great question, and I get asked this often, and it's not an easy answer. I think it's not a question of age. I think it's a deep question of maturity, and we see so many young leaders today who really did their work. Means the reflection of who they are, their shadows, what's driving them, maybe what purpose they have already in an early age. They are not as driven from an ego perspective. But I also see that in an older age, you have the huge advantage of experience. And experience combined with a deep reflection is really leading to great decisions and quick decisions because you tap into a wide range of wisdom through this experience. So I wouldn't say it's really about the age or the phase when you step into leadership. It's really about a mindset. How evolved are you in your personal development?
Eve, it's fascinating to talk about wisdom. And in the past, the leader was the person with the most knowledge, perhaps, and maybe the personal style to get other people to follow them. Today, with digital, the power of knowledge is in the hands of everybody. Everybody from the most senior person to the most junior person in the organization has access to information in real time. Perhaps can make decisions that impact the wider organization. Is everybody a leader in an organization now?
Yeah, Paul, I actually do think so, that everyone has the potential to be a leader. That not necessarily means that everyone needs to be a leader, but they can tap into that. And you said something very important is definition of wisdom. Wisdom, on my point of view, is not just an intellectual wisdom like the IQ, but it also relates to EQ and LQ and to the body intelligence and system intelligence and much more.
Can I interrupt you? I know what EQ is. IQ, of course, intelligence. EQ, emotional or empathetic.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What was LQ?
Ooh, LQ is one of my favorites. It's a love intelligence. It has a lot to do with a careship, and it's not my what I thought about, because the founder of Alibaba is really talking a lot about this, that he's leading from an LQ and how relevant this is. Mm. So,
sorry to interrupt.
No, this is a perfect
that's
question.
That's fascinating. I mean, so what does high LQ look like?
High LQ is a lot about really connecting to people. It has about to do with passion and compassion. But I also like to come back to Paul's question around who's a leader. And so we said on one hand, there are many leaders. And I always think about when I started my career, pretty much when, in German we say, der beste Schrauber became the leader, which pretty much means the best person who knows about the screwdriver became the leader. A little hard to translate, but that is not the case anymore, right? So you don't, on one hand, because of Google and digitalization and knowledge management systems, you don't need so much knowledge around that anymore. But there are many examples, such as Trivago, which I love. They actually look for three leaders who come together to lead their squads and their teams, which is one, which is more thinking about the profit. One is more thinking about the service or the product, and one is more thinking about the people, people leading. And today,
external and internal.
External and internal, absolutely. Yeah. And today, a leader needs to have all of that. And that is really a challenge. I mean, looking at, you know, I was a manager myself for many years, and you have everything, you know what every person needs. At the same time, you are driving the profit, depending on if you are, depending on which company you are with, it's different agenda on that part. And then you need to be innovative all the time and satisfy the needs of a customer. There's a lot of challenges in that. And so I think, you know, it could be three leaders in one squad or one team. It could be that everyone is a leader to a certain time, coming back to your question. You know, it depends on also what it is, because I think now we not just think in products anymore, in services, we also think in impact.
Right, yeah, right. I mean, we're seeing in many of the companies we're working with, they actively recognize one leader cannot sit at the top of the pyramid with the rest of the organization doing their bidding. The companies are too complex, too distributed, that they are actively looking to deboss or unboss, so that the leaders are not within one person. Not you. I imagine today we're not going to find all those qualities in one person, but maybe you find them in the organisation, and then it's about how you aggregate those.
We had a very nice conversation with Coca-Cola, who've been at their head office. They have an enormous network around the world, and they're trying to make themselves fit for purpose for this new world. And the conversation was about sapiential leadership, which was the idea that the person who has the skill in the moment is the person who takes the lead, which is another nice way. One of the metaphors they use is about the geese who are flying in a V formation toward the wherever they go when they...
The migration path.
The migration path, exactly. But what I didn't know was that the geese at the front are leading until they get tired, and the geese at the back are honking, honk, honk, to encourage the one at the front. And then when that one gets tired, it moves to the back, and the next one moves forward in a self-organizing way, which is how they manage these enormous distances down to Africa and so on. And in, for sapiential leadership, the idea that there is no hierarchy necessary, but a recognition that the roles and the skills that you have in the moment are primary, which it's a different way of looking at things. It's not the only one. I very much like the Trivago idea as well. But this idea of sapiential leadership, that the person who has the knowledge in the moment is the one we all swarm around and allow to lead, no matter what their experience, how old they are, or who they are in the organization, so that they take us forward until they're done and the next person takes the lead.
If you're used to being a leader and you can lead and people do what you've been asked to do, do we not just have chaos?
But doesn't it just provide more responsibility? It requires people to take more responsibility.
Right, so how do we get the wider organization to take to have those skills, to know when to take the lead, to know when to move to the front?
How do you equip a modern organization to be able, for anyone who's at that decision-making point, to to have what's needed to act well.
And I want to challenge this because this question already indicates a certain mindset, right? Why is that scary? Because when I love always these parallels to looking into nature, because biomimicry, we can learn so much about it. And the birds are not afraid. They just know what to do because they know different patterns. And they know in different areas and with different wind conditions and so on, depending on where they go, they just have to have another constellation. They are much more fluid in the way. And yes, we Germans tend to be so stuck. We like our comfort zone instead of seeing the beauty of stretching out of a comfort zone and exploring and learning. I think it's also this constant learning. There is not one solution. Everyone's talking about the methods we need for the new work environment, from Scrum to design thinking and holacracy and open space. But there's not one solution. Let's all learn and take one step at a time. But we talked a lot about the knowledge. And I think leaders are also defined by their vision. Mm. And the vision with the impact to the greater good is actually what is leading us forward. So whenever an evolutionary leader is leading something, he has to ask this question about, do we need that? What kind of impact has it? Do we target the problems we really need to target? And I think it's not the knowledge, it's also the way of personality and the way of mindset they bring in to lead their tribe. And almost you can change this word of leading into influencing and inspiring, right? There are many, many attitudes now for a leader to have. Mm.
This is a long way away from traditional command and control leadership.
Because something's never changed, though. And one of the things you referred to, Paul, was about how do you stop it from deteriorating into digital chaos. I really think that self-organization is a powerful philosophy and is behind a lot of what's going on digitally. But I think there are problems, in as much as if all organizations are self-organizing, if everybody is using the same software online, all the same social networking software and business networking social software and so on, we risk homogeneity. The point about homogeneity is that if we're all becoming the same, then there is no difference, no unique selling positions, and there's no difference that makes a difference in what these tribes or organizations are achieving. So for me, the thing that doesn't change is there's still a need for leadership. But the question, because you need organizations and systems and networks around the world and ecosystems to still achieve things and differentiate themselves from others, question is, how as leaders do we do that in this new world without doing what everybody else is doing? Where is the, and yeah, to build on that, where is the balance between too much self-organization and not enough?
Yeah, I, from my point of view, I often bring it back to a family constellation. And obviously, there are different family constellations, and everyone has a pro and a con. Again, bringing it back to see what's needed in different situations. Sometimes I am leading my children in a very clear direction, also to protect them. On the other hand, when they become a teenager, I love when they are so rebellious, and the rebellious side is leading to something new. They question things, right? Innovation comes out of that. So they're a very, very important part. And in this way, we could say parents, which we call now the leaders, are holding a space for unfolding of different qualities. But sometimes the rebellious daughter can also lead the way of the family constellation. So I think it's almost like also defining a new matrix in it, instead of what is in our mind a leader. I think leaders of today holding a lot of space, as parents do. They protect us, they are guiding us, but they also leave the room that we can unfold to something we are very uniquely, and with their impact we want to have in the world, which parents don't know yet.
That's a very interesting parallel concept of the parent. So part of being a good parent is a responsiveness, isn't it? And can that be extrapolated into an organizational context too, that responsiveness?
I think very much. I think we have nowadays, when all the millennials they came in, the Generation C is coming in, which is a little bit more the toddler side. We have the father, but I think a very important criteria is missing, and that are mothers. We have women in the workplace, but we don't have mothers. And the responsive side is a lot about a mother. A mother always makes a decision based on the need of the child and the greater good for that child and the society where she or he will grow up in. And that, I think,
in that moment, at that time.
At that moment, at that time.
Because whilst we have maybe grand plans as parents for our children and what they may become in 20 years' time, that may not be right for them. Similarly, in organisation, yes, to have a clear vision, to have somewhere we're heading to is vital. I think we would probably agree with this. But the ability to be able to check in with what's going on now, be open to changing that, take feedback from your family, the people that are within your organisation, to sense and respond and do something different. That's a pretty, not an easy thing to do. It's a brave thing to do, perhaps.
I like the family metaphor a lot. How that translates into leadership in organisations is similar, because we have a duty of care to our organisations, but we also have a duty to keep things focused on what we're trying to achieve as an organization, and nudge and respectfully move people in the direction that you need them to go, so that we all achieve what we're trying to achieve.
Paul and Garrett, that's a beautiful sentiment. So how is digital enabling that with the feedback loops, and what are some of the things that a leader can do today to leverage the tools?
Well, it means I can just send a text message without having to speak to you directly, which is nice. Which is nice. it solves all those awkward moments, difficult conversations.
But things like enterprise social networks, for example, that is, you know, as part of the unbossing that you spoke of, Paul, as well, there's that, but there's also a lot of other tools available. So how are you seeing that now evolve?
It's creating a lot of opportunity and possibility for leaders, but it creates a lot of fear for the people that are working in companies as well. If my boss tomorrow is no longer a person, but an app on my device in my hand that's telling me what tasks I need to do today, who I need to speak to, this is a pretty unpersonalized world that I'm not sure many people want. It might be efficient, it might be highly profitable, but is it a world that we want to live in? So I think the impact of digital in leadership is going to be fascinating in the types of behaviours it encourages and changes in leaders, but what it's doing for the people that are working in those organisations as well. And, you know, one of the things that we worry and talk about a lot is, what are we creating all the technology for? Are we able to keep people, are we keeping humans at the heart of the organisations that we're transforming? I think this is something that has to be at the centre of it.
Are we all for do a nod of nodging? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would say I'm pro technology from a human point of view.
Yeah. Right? I think we all agree, right? At the end, it's about the people and it's about our society. And I think technology, what it's possible, is actually a blessing. It can do so many things where we went off track with our focus in business, especially. But coming back to leaders, also, Paul, what you said, what always comes into my mind is the really task of a leader of the future is a lot about relationship. And many times we don't have that time for building the relationship, encouraging relationship, the trust everyone talks about, which really makes a good leader. So technology helps the leadership, but I think also it helps, of course, companies and organizations, especially global, to work together. So I'm not even so sure. Obviously, the digital natives are much more open to that than the older generation, who step by step comes towards technology, but is still very skeptical. I think for them it will be normal to, you know, speak with Alexa, also have something right at that in the business, and that not just artificial intelligence, but also augmented reality And these kind of things are part of it. So we might not see the person, the leader who tells us in which direction we need to innovate in person, but we see them kind of still real. The reality is changing, I think, through technology. But why we still need leaders is because we are talking about people. You know, robots and machines will help us. But at the end, the people who walk around here on this globe are human beings. And I think the really good advantage of technology is now to bring, to become again more human. And humanity brings, to bring humanity forward again. And that's also, Garrick, what we said at the beginning is this care again, care for people and care for the planet and not just care for a profit, for a big house and your own. So I think it's also much more for the collective in which we are heading than for the individual.
The other thing that technology brings us is, and certainly to leadership, is the ability to cast a much greater shadow over a larger group of people than ever before with much smaller resources. So a leader can really have a global impact without actually going to all of these places. And it all becomes about messaging and being very clear about the messages that you are putting out into these groups of people you influence, how you obtain people's attention, which is an old management requirement, but it's got to be done in new ways. What are the messages? What is the media you're using? Where are you communicating? What are the channels you're using to nudge the system and ensure that the coherence of what you're trying to achieve as a tribe is in place? And then we move very rapidly into these ideas of ritual space, because it becomes, if it's about how you get people's attention, how you get people emotionally involved, how you keep people in the tribe focused on what you're all trying to achieve with the values that you're trying to promote to achieve those things, there are things that need to be done regularly, rituals which need to be performed in many respects in this multimedia space to enable people to connect emotionally with what's going on. And I'm using an old world ritual, but with new ideas associated to it. Perhaps it's the way that you communicate with media online, the way that you connect with people in your organization on a regular basis, the way that you encourage people or keep them focused on what's being done, have to be invented and reinvented.
Yeah, I actually like this word of ritual a lot. Maybe something else comes into my mind than you were heading to, because what I see now today, right, doing all this consulting all over the world, people are really unhappy. They are just not happy in the workforce, and that they look a lot to the leaders or the corporations, and that we have a chance to create more satisfaction. And it always comes down to so simple things. And the Dalai Lama says that happiness lays in routine and ritual. And we almost have, through digitalization, where everything is really fast and we have to be on all the time, we always almost have no time to get into healthy rituals. So coming down to understanding people, which leaders need to do, is they all want to be loved, they all want to be seen and respected, that they have an impact and their lives matters. So if this is everywhere the same around the globe, it all comes down to a psychological need we have, and safety, obviously, which is not in every place of the world the case, unfortunately. But when we look into our Western world, and how can leaders really create a workforce where everyone is happy again?
This then becomes a design principle, perhaps, right? So, and we talk about this in the book around how digital maybe gives you the opportunity to design work around people's lives, as opposed to people designing their lives around their work. Maybe we will get to a point where gone is the life where you have a 40, 50 year career, and then the career ends, and then you have to have a new identity. But instead, your work is around how you live, your family, the things you do, the things you enjoy, the things you love, the things you engage in.
I have a question about, it's also really a question for Eve, about what, say, you have leaders today, or what message would you have for leaders today who may not possess the same values that you have about care and empathy? And I don't want to name names, but what about leaders that have zero integrity and are oligarchs, perhaps, and are just out for dominating their patch at the expense of everybody else? How do we deal with that?
I believe that, first of all, everyone is a good person. That just society and sociology made them go into the wrong direction. So I think today it's extremely important that everyone who thinks who is a leader really does their own work and looks at their own shit. And that, I think, is so super crucial that they see their own shadows. Because if they see their own shadows and really reflect on where their inner pain is coming from and what impact that inner game and inner pain has in the impact they have in the outside, I think they will change that if they heal themselves in many ways. And so I don't have a person in mind like you maybe have, but I think we are all in it collectively. And if you come to a person with a good intention, that good intention comes back to you. So let's get a ripple effect out there, because we have tons of great people out there who are just waiting to spread the love and create something good everywhere in the world.
Eve, this requires a very different outlook from an organizational perspective and your approach towards capability building. Because you're not just talking about building skills in, say, proficiency on tools and so forth, but you're talking about the leader of the future having a self-reflective mindset. So how do you convince organizations that that's the right focus? How do you link it to the goals of the organization?
Yeah, so I think this is the most crucial part, and that's the biggest shift we can do, because it totally changes the mindset, and then the tools comes after. So there are many tools out there to help organizations to bring the self-reflection to leaders in many, many ways. If you look into the human potential movement, which is really on the edge for a long, long time, you can use them. They are out there. They're available. You can use them even digital nowadays, right? In the early days, we had this one-on-one coaching, usually executive coaching. That requires a lot of time and a lot of investment. That's not needed anymore. There are fabulous tools out there where you run through a process, and through the digital connections, you can share, and you really let fall your mask and you start to reflect. And I think it brings everyone really so much further into a really solid maturity. We are need to reframe everything. And it starts with corporations, the same in schools, right? Teachers have to look at each other and themselves, how they present themselves in government. It's everywhere in our power centers. We are having, there needs to happen that work. I mean, you can take it further, right? In the hubs of transformation, which is my second home, Silicon Valley. Of course, technology is big there, but you don't believe what's going on there, right? I mean, they are back to looking at the old ancient tribes and what wisdom they had and how they tapped into that. They even bring out psychedelics. You think that's crazy, but there are a lot of great things like ayahuasca, which is natural, which totally let go of your shadows and your pains in a really quick way. Who knows what's coming, right? We are thinking on a mainstream way right now, but there is another movement going on right now who helps leaders to be the best they can be, to create something totally new. Obviously, there's also the other part who is still very ego-driven, who might, still wants to build their empires, personal empires, with their followers below, which they control. That's still out there. We know that. But I do think there's lots of movement against that.
Seems, Eve, you're saying as we become more and more digital, leaders need to become more and more human. when we used to have large organizations that that were able to command and control,
yeah.
And that was the way they did it. We design matrices, we invent organizational hierarchies. Digital has blown that apart. So we can use it, and I hear you saying leaders can use the digital tools to do that, but actually their goal is always to become more human, more present, more connected to the people that they're working with.
Yeah, and go in a deeper, deeper human wisdom.
So, and finally, what are some practical things that leaders can do today? Eve, let's start with you, please.
So one thing we already mentioned is really look at their self-leadership excellence, really dive into what are their individual drivers, right? Where they're coming from, where their talents, but also where their barriers and biases and shadows, to really look at their own purpose in life and their vision they have, to bring that in sync with their entity's vision or a vision in larger. So that's the first one. I also think that they definitely have to hold the space and encourage everyone to get more digital and train the group into these different methods, and not just as classical trainings, but really as on-the-job practices. Right, send them to the right schools which are out there, which are amazing, like Kuiper Island or Think, which are very, very different. And you use these digital platforms to educate, like blended learning courses. And I think leaders also, that's my third recommendation, is go out of your ecosystem, look for someone who's totally different, and learn from them, right? Some call it the learning journeys. Not necessarily you need to go to Silicon Valley, because there are others in Tel Aviv and in Estonia and Stockholm and Berlin and so on. But even in their region, look for someone who is not in your circle and get into the conversation and ask the crucial questions and dive deep into a real conversation and build a network which creates an amazing ecosystem for the future.
Thank you, Eve. And Garrick?
I'd like to build on that. When Eve talks about knowing yourself as a leader, the thing that's valuable from doing that kind of reflection and becoming grounded and in touch with yourself is that it allows you to communicate through all kinds of media in a way that touches other people. And my advice to build on Eve's points is, technically, I think everybody who is a leader and wants to be a leader needs to work on their media presence and needs to work on skills in front of cameras and skills online in front of microphones, because that's the medium through which we're communicating more often than not. 150 years ago, you needed to know how to stand on a soapbox and project your voice and talk in a particular way at a particular pitch to communicate to a crowd of 1,000 people without microphones. Nowadays, the mechanisms are the media. And I think it's only when you are in touch with yourself and know yourself and are grounded that you actually transcend the screen, the barrier, and can touch people, because they feel your humanity and they feel who you are, and they feel you are unguarded in many respects. And that, I think, is a key skill for leaders who want to work digitally.
Thank you. And Paul?
Leonardo da Vinci once said, it's been written, it had long since come to my attention that people of accomplishment rarely sat back and let things happen to them. They went out and happened to things. And I think my lesson for leaders out of this conversation would be, go out and happen to things. So in a world where leaders are trying to get people to muster around their flag so that their organization is making a difference and is unique, find ways every day to connect, engage, and motivate people to understand more clearly what your purpose is as an organization, where are you going and why, and what is the role of every single individual in your organization to help you achieve that.
Well, I think we're going to end there. I just want to say an enormous thank you to all of our speakers here, Paul, Garrick, and Eve. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me here. It was really a pleasure to exchange and ripple this message out.
Thank you, Eve. Thank you, George.
And you've been listening to a Ludic podcast. This is titled Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations. Thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and we look forward to you joining us next time.